Jai Shri Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Shwati Shwati Shishimadesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Shri Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Shwati Shwati Shishimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Jai. Nama Acharya Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. ISKCON BPT Founder Acharya Hisan Great Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prem Sikho Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinacha Amakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavadam Ki Jai. Mayapudam Ki Jai. Gangamai Munamai Ki Jai. Tulasi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Shri Harinam Sankirtan Yagya Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. All Gaurisam devotees, all Gaurisam devotees, all Gaurisam devotees, all Gauris, all Gauris, Shishi, Guru and Gauranga. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna. So we are reading Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verses 10 through 15. I'm not expert on Bengali, so we're going to chant together first few shlokas. Text 10. Sei vibhinnam sha jiva duita prakaram eka nitya mukta eka nitya samsaram. Translation: the living entities, jivas, are divided in two categories. Some are eternally liberated and others are eternally conditioned. Text 11. Nitya mukta nitya krishna charane unmukam krishna parisadana mahabunje sevasukam. Translation: those who are eternally liberated are always awake to Krishna consciousness and they render transcendental loving service at the feet of Lord Krishna. They are to be considered eternal associates of Krishna and they are eternally enjoying the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. Text 12. Nitya bada krishne haite nitya bahir mukam nitya samsara bunje narakadi dukam. Translation. Apart from the ever-liberated devotees, they are the conditioned souls who always turn away from the service of the Lord. They are perpetually conditioned in this material world, and they are subjected to the material tribulations brought about by different bodily forms in hellish conditions. 13, text 13. Sei doshe maya pishachi dandakara etare adhyatmika di tapatraya tare jari mare. Due to his being opposed to Krishna consciousness, the conditioned soul is punished by the witch of the external energy, Maya. He is thus ready to suffer the threefold miseries, miseries brought about by the body and mind, the inimical behavior of other living entities, and natural disturbances caused by the demigods. And verses 14 and 15. Kama krodera dasa hanatara laitikayam brahmite brahmite yadi sadhu vaidhyakayam tandra upadesha mantre pishachi palayam krishna bhakti payatabhe krishna nikata jayam. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires. And when those are not fulfilled, he becomes a servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy, Maya. Wandering and wandering throughout the universe, he may by chance get the association of devotee physician, whose instructions and hymns become whose instructions and hymns make the witch of external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with the devotional service of Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. Report by His Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. An explanation of verses 8 through 15 is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Bhashya. The Lord is spread throughout the creation in his quadruple expansions and incarnations. Krishna is fully represented with all potencies in each and every personal extension. But the living entities, although separated expansions, are also considered one of the Lord's energies. The living entities are divided in two categories, the eternally liberated and eternally conditioned. Those who are ever liberated never come in contact with Maya, the external energy. The ever conditioned are always under the clutches of the external energy. This is described in Bhagavad Gita, Daivihi Esha Gunamayi Mamma Maya Duratyaya. This divine energy of mind consisting of three moods of material nature is difficult to overcome. The Nitya Badas are always conditioned by the external energy, and the Nitya Muktas never come in contact with the external energy. Sometimes an ever-liberated personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends into this universe just as the Lord descends. Although working for the liberation of conditioned souls, the messenger of the Supreme Lord remains untouched by the material energy. Generally, ever-liberated personalities live in the spiritual world as associates of Lord Krishna, and they are known as Krishna Parisadam, associates of the Lord. Their only business is enjoying Lord Krishna's company, and even though such eternally liberated persons come within this material world to serve the Lord's purpose, they enjoy Lord Krishna's company without stoppage. The ever liberated person who works on Krishna's behalf enjoys Lord Krishna's company through his engagement. The ever conditioned soul, provoked by lusty desires to enjoy the material world, is subjected to transmigrate from one body to another. Sometimes he is elevated to higher planetary systems, and sometimes he is degraded to hellish planets and subjected to the tribulations of the external energy. Due to being conditioned by the external energy, the conditioned soul within this material world gets two kinds of bodies, A gross material body and subtle body comprised of mind, intelligence, and ego. Due to the gross and subtle bodies, he is subjected to the threefold miseries, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, and adhidaivika. Miseries arising from the body and mind, other living entities, and natural disturbances caused by the demigods from higher planetary systems. The conditioned soul subjected to the threefold misery, material miseries, is ceaselessly kicked by Maya, and this is his disease. If by chance he meets a saintly person who works on Krishna's behalf to deliver conditioned souls, and if he agrees to abide by his order, he can gradually approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Kama krodera dasahana tadala sikaya brahmite brahmite yadi sadhu vaidya paya tandra upadesh mantre pishachi palayam krishna bhakti paya tabe krishna nikata jayam. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires. And when those are not fulfilled, he becomes a servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy, Maya. Wandering throughout the universe, he may by chance get the association of the devotee physician, whose instructions and hymns make the witch of external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with the devotional service of Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpataruvyacha Kripa Sinuvayavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we have wonderful verses today describing the ever-exciting journey of the living entity in the material world. And as it is described here in a very graphic way, the living entity is being kicked by the exterior energy of the Lord, Maya. So, one time there was a teacher in school, and he asked his students, and they were young students, young kids. He told them, "Go ahead and paint what you desire to become when you grow up." I'm sure all of us had similar questions when we were children, you know, parents or maybe other relatives, and they come, "Oh, you little, so cute. What would you like to be when you grow up?" Has anybody had that experience when you were a kid? Yeah. And so the kids in this class, basically they started painting, you know, what they thought they want to become. And one of the students, he painted, you know, a picture of a policeman. He wanted to be a strong policeman. The other one wanted to be a firefighter. And then one of the students wanted to be the doctor, you know, something like that. And teacher, he was going around and, you know, observing what the kids were painting down. And then he came to one of the students and he looked in kind of surprised, you know, fashion. And he noticed this student, he didn't paint anything. He only had big smiley face. Big smiley face. And the teacher looked and said, did you not understand the assignment? And student says, oh, yeah, I did. But what's this? And the student said, well, I want to be happy when I grow up. And teacher says, no, I don't think you understood the assignment. I meant like what you want to become when you're grown up, man. And the student says, well, I just want to be happy. What's the problem with that? So, anyhow, probably the student should have said, my dear teacher, you don't understand the meaning of life. But anyhow, the point of the story is basically the living entity in this material world has so many imposed identities that were pretty much forced upon us from the early childhood. You know, our parents, they want us to, you know, become something big in material world so they can be proud of us. And then as we grow up, the material society is constantly pressuring the conditioned soul to seek some type of material achievement, which, you know, quite often is just distraction from our main purpose, which is actually seeking Krishna and Krishna's lotus feet. So the verses we are reading today, basically, they are describing there's two types of living entities. And one are here described as Nitya Samsara, perpetually conditioned. This word Samsara is quite interesting. You know, we find it in our famous song Shishi Guru Ashtaka by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And you know, one thing I was actually reflecting, when we joined Krishna consciousness, you know, every morning we chanted song, Samsara, you know, in a very happy fashion. But then, you know, one day I found the translation, and it says a blazing fire of material existence. So I was thinking, like, who in this world, like, other than, you know, Krishna's devotees, you know, 4:30 in the morning, you know, happily chanting, oh, blazing fire in material world. It's so funny, but at the same time, very, very unique, because we understand this material world, as Prabhupada said, is not place for ladies and gentlemen. So therefore, we worship our spiritual master, and every morning we chant his glories, and we say, basically, I offer my respects to my respectful obeisance unto the lotus feet of such spiritual master, who is an ocean of auspicious qualities. And it's described here, just as a cloud pours water on a forest fire to extinguish it, so the spiritual master delivers the materially afflicted world by extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence. So, very sweet. So, basically, the verses are discussing and describing here. By the way, does everybody understand, like, in what chapter we are, and in CC, and who is talking, and to whom? So, Madhavanati, you want me to say? So basically, this chapter is called The Process of Devotional Service. And Lord Chaitanya is essentially instructing Sanatana Goswami. An interesting thing, if you read the entire chapter, and there is, if I'm correct, 169 verses in this chapter, quite long chapter. But interestingly, at the end, when you come to the end, Lord Chaitanya is saying, this is just a brief description of the process of devotional service, just a brief description, you know, 169 verses. But the point is, devotional service is unlimited and its glories are unlimited. So Lord Chaitanya is basically telling in this world there is two living entities, those who are eternally conditioned and those who are eternally liberated. And it's described, those who are eternally liberated, they are experiencing something very unique. The word is used here, seva sukha, sukha, happiness, like we have another sukha. But seva, service, sukha, happiness, the happiness of service. So we are trying to follow in the footsteps of such great personalities and come to that level eventually. Now, basically, it's described in these verses that the conditioned souls, they are actually averse, bahirmukha, averse, and they're averse to the service to the Lord, and therefore they're continuously forced to suffer in these material conditions, naraka adi dukkha, hellish life. And what they're suffering, basically, adi atmika, adi bhautika, adi daivika. Now, it's also described that conditioned soul basically has two bodies. Has a physical body that we can all perceive in the mirror when we look ourselves, and also subtle body. And when you think, actually the suffering caused by the mind, which is part of the subtle body, is actually much, much greater. Interestingly, the scientists, they were kind of researching the human mind and our psyche, and they came to the conclusion, actually I read a couple of different researches, that in our day-to-day activities, basically about 50 to 60,000 thoughts come through our mind every day. Can you imagine? It's like a very busy highway, you know, just constantly the thoughts are coming in and out, constantly. And depending on the quality of those thoughts, they determine the quality of our life. If those thoughts are polluted by lust, anger, envy, then the conditioned soul is forced to suffer as a result of those thoughts. It's explained, basically the scientists are saying that those thoughts are so powerful that they affect everything in our physical body, from the pulse of our heart to the cells of every cell on our body. There's even a story, one time, one poor guy, basically he was a worker on a train station, and one afternoon, the boss told him, okay, today you guys can go home early. And as they were cleaning the different compartments of the train, this poor man, he actually ends up being locked inside the freezer container that is meant for transportation of goods that need to be in a colder temperature. And somehow everybody left, and he stayed locked behind, and there was nobody to free him. And he started to panic, basically. He started to panic and scream and shout for help, help, somebody please. And the sad story is basically he ends up dying. And when they were doing the autopsy, they determined the cause of his death was that essentially, I forgot the medical terminology, but he died due to the cold temperature. Does anybody know what's the term? Yeah, thank you. So now the interesting thing about this particular case is Later on, when they examined everything, they determined that actually the cooler was off. It wasn't turned on. So it was actually room temperature. But he convinced himself that it is actually colder than normal. His mind went so much out of control that he convinced himself that he's freezing to the point of actually killing himself. So that just tells us how powerful our mind is. Therefore, we have a great fortune to be in touch with this transcendental knowledge. And therefore, the Maha Mantra is the ideal means of actually liberating the conditioned soul and freeing it from the clutches of Maya, as described in the purport, the witch Maya flees away when there is when the conditioned soul starts to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. So the verses 14 and 15 basically are saying, if by chance the conditioned soul is fortunate enough to come in touch with the saintly person and abides by his orders. Now, one thing I was actually also recently reading, and I think Pranagovinda Prabhu actually mentioned that yesterday too, the conditioned soul basically has to suffer in this life, the results of prarabdha karma, which are all the, you know, our karmic activities who are actually fructifying in this life. So there's no way to escape that. Now, interestingly, in the case of devotee, he completely differently perceives that suffering from the materialistically minded people. The devotee sees it completely in different light. So one time basically personified Dharma in the form of the bull. Basically, he was wandering throughout the earth and he found Mother Earth, which was in the form of a cow, crying with her tears in eyes. And he inquired from her, basically, "My dear mother, why are you crying? Is it due to the loss of your calf, or is it, you know, for some other reason?" And personified Mother Earth basically informed him that the Lord actually left me bereft of his association. And as they were discussing, basically, you know, we find these beautiful verses in the first canto of Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikshit, he comes and he sees basically a low-class man dressed as a king, basically beating the cow and bull. And he inquires from him, "Who are you? I see you are dressed as a king, but you're behaving like, you know, as a low-class person, not obeying the orders of the, you know, kshatriyas and brahmanas." So as he was observing, then he also noticed bull and he inquired from him, "And who are you, my beautiful personality?" You know, the beautiful white bull was there, but he was only standing on one leg. So basically, it's very interesting discussion there, and I'm not going to go into details, but I encourage all of us to go and, you know, study this this conversation between personified Dharma and Maharaj Parikshit. Because he's inquiring from him, from personified Dharma, "Who is the cause of your suffering?" And of course, Dharma himself, he could have said, "I mean, don't you see, like, you know, this crazy guy is beating me." But no, he's not saying that. He actually goes on to explain, and I'll try to find it here. So these are the words of Dharma personified. Oh, greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that activity is responsible, and the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage among kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. Very interesting answer personified Dharma is giving. So the conversation goes on, and then Parikshit, he realizes that this is no one other than actually Dharma himself. And then I just like to point two verses here. He's saying, in the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust, and intoxication. You are now standing on one leg only, which is your truthfulness, and you are somehow or other hobbling along. But quarrel personified, which is Kali, flourishing by the seat, is also trying to destroy that leg. So Parikshit is basically saying, even that last leg, which is truthfulness in the sage of Kali, basically Kali is trying to break even that last leg by inducing the quarrel among the people. And we can practically see it around the world. That is exactly what's happening. But at least we as devotees, we have this knowledge, so we have to be careful not to allow Kali to interfere in our own affairs. Because the greatest calamity for this world would be if we as devotees actually argue among ourselves. As we know, the old strategy of conquering, you know, during the any kind of like political challenge is basically conquer and divide. If you want to defeat your enemy, you conquer. I mean, you actually make them argue among themselves, and that way you can defeat them easily. So, as Prabhupada is saying in purport on his on the verses 14 and 15 in this chapter, he's saying, if by chance we meet saintly person who works on Krishna's behalf to deliver conditioned soul, and if we agree to buy by his order, then we have great, great chance to actually free ourselves from the miseries of this world. So I was examining what is our situation. We are actually one of those fortunate people because we did come in chance by our spiritual master. Now, whether or not we will agree to obey his order, that is the question mark. That is up to all of us to decide individually. And if we think, why would we not obey? What could be the reason? Only if we don't see the value in it. And what would be a reason for us not to see the value in this wonderful process of Krishna consciousness? Well, one of the main reasons is lack of understanding. So therefore, process of Shravanam Kirtanam is essential for us, because proper hearing brings clear understanding. Without proper hearing, the understanding will be clouded, and we will not be able to make right decisions in our day-to-day activities. So as Srila Narottam Dakus, Narottam Das Thakur chanted in his prayer, Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan Ratina Janmilo Kenetai Samsara Bishanare Dibanisha Hiya Jwale Juraite Nakoinu Upai. The treasure of divine love in Goloka Vrindavan has descended as the congregational chanting of Lord Hari's holy names. So Narottam Das Thakur is saying the treasure. There's one interesting story. Back in early 20s, in the previous century actually. So there was one man. He was basically, there was a gold fever in America, and everybody was trying to mine for the gold. So this poor guy, he decided he's gonna, you know, try his luck, and he is gonna travel to the West and try to search for the gold. And he left his family, he took all his savings, little money that he had, and he traveled west to Colorado, and he bought a piece of land where they thought there is actually gold in earth. And he started digging, you know, searching, working hard, day and night. And he actually did find it. So he found a gold vein in earth. And he was so happy, you know, finally his dreams are coming, you know, true. And first few weeks went very successful. You know, he was basically almost about to break even and pay all his debts, because he borrowed money from his relatives to buy the equipment and so on. And he was thinking, you know, just, you know, a few more weeks and I would be making fortune. But all of a sudden that golden vein in earth dried up and there was no more gold. And he was completely devastated. He tried anything, looking, you know, going deeper and looking around, but there was no more gold. And he spent like maybe another month desperately searching for gold, but he couldn't find it. And out of his frustration, he gave up. And he sold his plot of land to some, what do you call, like junk man who buys like cheap like goods for like very, very cheap money. And the interesting thing about this case, shortly after, this junk man, even though he was junk man, he was actually quite intelligent. He decided to ask for the advice of the experts. So he went to one engineer and he explained the situation, that there was gold previously but all of a sudden disappeared. And this engineer, he actually calculated precisely that 3 feet left from the point where it was already being digged, there will be gold again. And surely enough, this junk man, he goes back and he finds huge amounts of gold there. So why am I telling you this story? In our devotional lives, especially in our early days, we receive special mercy from devotees. We feel very enthusiastic. We feel like, you know, fired up, you know, and we can do anything. But as the time progresses, our enthusiasm kind of a little bit shrinks. And especially when the challenges of life, you know, get thrown on us, we tend to sometimes a little bit lose our, you know, our enthusiasm. So just like this junk man, we need to approach the expert who has actually superior understanding to us and ask for his guidance, ask for his advice. That way we can rekindle our enthusiasm. And, you know, we shouldn't be like this poor guy who actually gave up and walked away from the richest of his life. Because Just like he, we also have the greatest treasure, which is given to us by our beloved Srila Prabhupada. But if we don't perceive it as a treasure, we may at one point think, oh, you know, I tried it for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. I don't see, you know, much profit. And then we may walk away, or we may kind of, you know, not pursue it with that one-pointed determination which Krishna is talking about in the second chapter of Gita. So, at the end, I would like to share with you and read to you one love letter. Now, this love letter is not just any ordinary love letter. Guess who wrote it, or who it's from? Rukmini. Rukmini Devi. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, let me ask you one thing. What would you say Rukmini Devi and Sanatan Goswami have in common? If you would kind of examine their, you know, their way of surrendering to the Lord, what would you say is the commonality? Yes.
They're both extremely humble.
Thank you. What else? How did they actually get to Krishna? By tricks, isn't it? Doesn't Rukmini Devi writes secret letter, and she sends it to, you know, via Brahmin to deliver it to Krishna. So let me try to kind of explain what I'm meaning here. King Bhishmaka, he had five sons and one daughter. And the oldest son, Rukmi, he wanted very, you know, he was very determined to marry Rukmini Devi to Shishupal. So Rukmini Devi, being the daughter of king, she was very intelligent, of course very humble, but at the same time she was basically, she was not just sitting and waiting, oh, poor me, you know, let's see what happens. No, she took the initiative to do something about her condition. She was expert in political science. So she realized, I have to do something. The time is ticking. The clock is ticking. So she sent a messenger to Lord Krishna and asked the Lord to come and kidnap me. So that's one, you know, one example. In the case of Sanatan Goswami, as we know, he was in a prison. And, you know, he could also say, what to do? I'm just, you know, in this prison cell. But no, he actually paid 7,000 gold coins to the jail keeper and told him, you know, he actually bribed him and told him, you know, when they ask you, just tell them, you know, Sanatan jumped in the river to kill himself and never came out. And don't worry about, you know, nobody's gonna question you. So, do you think that either one of them had any kind of guarantee? Like, did Sanatana Goswami for sure know that the jail keeper will actually go for his bribe and not actually tell the, you know, who was it? The Muslim king, I forgot the name. But anyhow, so there was no guarantee. Same thing in the case of Rukmini Devi. Of course, we know it's all Krishna's pastimes. But still, there's no guarantee that that Brahmin would deliver message in time and that Krishna would actually come and rescue her. So the point I'm trying to make is, in our own lives, we do have to take the action. We cannot just sit and hope for miracle without doing our part of work. I was recently listening. We all heard, like, you know, Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, and Kripa Siddha. So we have those who are eternally liberated. We have Sadhana Siddhis, which is us, you know, trying to perfect our life through the process of Sadhana Bhakti. And then there is also Kripa Siddhi, which is special mercy from the spiritual master. And it's described that Kripa Siddhi basically is a person who may not be necessarily following 100%, but due to the causeless mercy of the Lord or the spiritual master, he also attains perfection. So I was listening recently on one morning walk. Srila Prabhupada is being questioned about that, about the Kripa Siddhi. And interestingly, Prabhupada is saying Kripa Siddhi is actually also Sadhana Siddhi. And then he goes on to explain, actually, to receive Kripa Siddhi, you have to be also following Sadhana Siddhi. It's not like there's no free lunch. I mean, you have to do the work. We all have to do the work. So the point is, if we do our part, then if Krishna wills, he will, you know, do his part as well, and basically provide what's missing for us to achieve the perfection. So anyhow, I'm going to read this beautiful letter, and then we will stop. So this is Rukmini Devi. My dear Krishna, O infallible and most beautiful one, any human being who happens to hear about your transcendental form and pastimes immediately absorbs through his ears your name, fame, and qualities. Thus all his material pains subside, and he fixes your form in his heart. Through such transcendental love for you, he always sees you within himself. And by this process, all his desires are fulfilled. Similarly, I have heard of your transcendental qualities. I may be shameless in expressing myself directly, but you have captivated me and taken my heart. You may doubt my steadiness of character, since how could an unmarried young girl like me approach you without any shame? But my dear Mukunda, you are the supreme lion among human beings, the supreme person among persons. Any girl, though not yet having left her home, or even any woman of the highest chastity, will desire to marry you, being captivated by your unprecedented character, knowledge, opulence, and position. I know that you are the husband of the goddess of fortune and are very kind toward your devotees. Therefore, I have decided to become your eternal maidservant. My dear Lord, I dedicate my life and soul unto your lotus feet. I have selected your lordship as my husband, and I therefore request you to accept me as your wife. You are the supreme, powerful, all lotus-eyed one. Now I belong to you. If that which is enjoyable for the lion to eat is taken away by the jackal, it will be ludicrous affairs. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I'm taken away by public welfare work, like digging wells. Well, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll read from this sentence. If that which is enjoyable for the lion to eat is taken away by the jackal, it will be ludicrous affairs. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I'm taken away by Shishupal and other princes like him. My dear Lord, in my previous life, I may have done public welfare work like digging wells and planting trees, or pious activities such as performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices and serving superiors like the spiritual masters, brahmanas and vaishnavas. By these activities, perhaps I have pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. If this be so, then I wish that you, Lord Krishna, the brother of Lord Balaram, please come here and catch hold of my hand so that I should not be touched by Shishupal and his company. So I will stop here. If anybody would like to say anything, any questions, any critics, please do so.
So the Kripa City, they don't have to do anything, and just you just get the mercy in kind of in a passive way. In one sense, all the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement are at least candidates to become perfected by the mercy of the pure devotee, especially Srila Prabhupada. As you were saying, one has to actually do something, one has to be proactive. I don't know if you want to elaborate on that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, that is a very important point for us to understand, because what I understood from Srila Prabhupada's comment when he was questioned on the morning walk is essentially, yeah, we are all candidates for the Kripa City, but for us to receive that special boon, we do have to do our work, which Prabhupada wants us to essentially be very dedicated in our duties and performing our sadhana bhakti very carefully, avoiding the offenses to Vaishnavas and following the principles. So then the Kripa City will come, because in reality, what is our strength on our own? We cannot possibly imagine, you know, just based on our own endeavor, achieving perfection. But the reality is that spiritual master is very kind and merciful, and he will give us that blessing when he sees the sincerity in our heart.
Just to cap this point, with a little history, really quick. Some of you may have heard the exchange between Vishnu Janaswamy and Srila Prabhupada. And Vishnu Janaswamy very sincerely was almost crying and saying, "Srila Prabhupada, you give me so much mercy." And Srila Prabhupada very kindly responded, "I give my mercy to all my disciples, but you take advantage of it."
Yep. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, that is the fact. So it all depends on each of us individually, how much actually we want to taste the sweetness and how much we want to actually embrace it with our own heart. Okay, I think we can stop here. Thank you all so much. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Prema Nandi Hari Bol.